You're listening to Cinematic Adventures, proud member of the Misfit Faction Media Network.
Good morning, Vietnam!
I love the smell of napalm in the morning.
You're gonna need a bigger boat.
I feel the need for speed.
Roads, we're going, we don't need roads.
Snakes, why did it have to be snakes?
Vices? We don't need no vices. I don't have to show you any stinking vices.
You make me want to be a better man.
Nobody puts baby in a corner.
I wish I knew how to quit you.
Love means never having to say you're sorry.
He's looking at you, kid.
Not bad. I'm just drawn that way.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Cinematic Adventures. Don't forget, if you guys are listening to us on the go, you can find us on Podbean, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, iHeartRadio, basically anywhere you get your podcasts. You can also find more of our content on our website, themisfitfaction.com. There you find links to not only this show, but some of our other shows like MF Uncensored and The Multiverse Fancast. As always, I'm one of your hosts, Paul. With me in the studio today is Sean. Sean, how are you today?
I am great. How about you?
I'm doing all right. Thank you for asking. You're so sweet.
I know.
You're such a nice guy.
I am a great guy.
I mean, like, sometimes.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
I'm fully willing to admit that, you know. When this isn't going, I could be a real you-know-what.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But right now, I think you're actually kind of magical.
Oh, I see where you're going there.
You're a witch of a guy.
Oh, witch.
I panicked and ran out of puns immediately.
I'm more of a wizard than a witch, but okay.
Witch, please. All right, but anyway. So in case you guys haven't figured out by either A, the description, B, the title, C, the bad puns, or D, just knowing us, we are finally tackling a series that we've talked about this for a while. I believe this has been on the docket for some time. We were just waiting for the right time, the most magical time.
And what time is it?
It's like 3:45-ish, on a Sunday.
All no. Right.
But at time of recording, we have now had the release of Hogwarts Legacy on PlayStation and Xbox, and as we speak right now, producer Melanie is currently investigating the entire village of Hogsmeade 4 feet away from us. So if you hear any noise in the background, it is just Melanie playing Hogwarts Legacy while we talk about Harry Potter. So, Sean.
Yes.
Let's go back in time.
Sure.
To a time where people read books.
I still read books, but on their iPads.
1742 is the year.
Ah.
Ah. No, no, I'm just kidding. 1997.
Did you get, like, burnt at the stake for reading a book back then?
Yeah, especially if you were a woman.
Oh, yeah.
What a weird time in human history. But we are talking about witches, so, I mean, that kind of tracks.
And wizards.
I did enjoy... scratch that. I don't enjoy. But it's interesting to learn how they used to test for, quote-unquote, test for witches and wizards. It's like, all right, we're going to chain you to the bottom of this lake. If you survive... witch.
Or you can go the Monty Python route, you know, and if she weighs the same as a duck, then she's a witch.
Oh, I can't believe it. That's duck and crazy.
She turned me into a newt.
Yep, yep. And I can't believe that, you know, they had any doubts. But anywho, America.
Not really. It's more like England.
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 England. But anyway, so we debated if we wanted to do a two-parter with, you know, breaking up the 8 movies, or if we wanted to just... you know, do a couple here, a couple there. But we decided we're in for the long haul. So for the next 2 months.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, you didn't think about it when you decided.
No, I did think about it. But then when you said it, it just had a gravity to it. And I was just like, ugh.
A gravitas, if you will.
Harry Potter 2 month period.
Yeah.
Hey, it works.
Starting February 12th. Starting on Valentine's Day, this gets
released. There you go. Happy... Who says Valentine's Day like Harry Potter?
I mean, there's weird romance in it.
That's true.
Not the first one. Not the first one.
They're so, all like pre-pubescent kids, you know.
I wasn't really feeling romance at 11.
No.
So we are talking, though, Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone.
Well, Philosopher's Stone in England and the Sorcerer's Stone in the United States, India, and the Philippines.
Yes.
Because many people thought that Americans would not know what a philosopher is.
That I will not argue. Yeah. But anywho. So... we're going to start off with the first movie. We're going to talk a little bit about the book, too. I know we are not a book pod. Producer Melanie into doing something like that.
I was about to say, there is a book podcast around somewhere.
No, there's a book Instagram page called Bibliophiles Assemble. So, yeah, make sure you guys go listen to that or go check that out. So, we're going to talk very briefly about the books. We'll talk about the whole... I mean, basically, Harry Potter's a craze that has not died.
No, I agreed. And it's obviously continuing on with the Fantastic Beasts.
God, I hope not.
No. What I meant is the love of that world has continued with the Fantastic Beasts movies, because, what, they're now 3 movies Yeah. And doing a fourth one?
No, they were, and then this last one just didn't do well. Especially with all the Johnny Depp stuff.
Well, yeah, don't worry about that. Then you got the game that just came out. Mm-hmm. And then if you've ever been to Universal Studios and any of the Universal parks and all around the world, they have the Harry Potter, Wizarding World of Harry Potter
area. Which, start there. You and I went. When it first opened.
We were there probably a couple months, if not a year after it first opened, so still very early on.
Yeah, they did not have a lot of the stuff that they do now.
They've added stuff to it, but the general stuff was there. The ride, the in the Hogwarts castle, the village of Hogsmeade was there.
Still so cool.
So cool. They've added Diagon Alley and Gringotts Bank to it as well, which are also... The ride, not so much, but just the utter... To detail of the way they built both lands is incredible.
Well, like playing the game, like... Melanie and I are just stuck exploring. Like the whole place is just it's wild, the attention to detail. And so, really important question, Sean. What house are you?
I would like to think I'd be Gryffindor, but I'd probably end up being like Ravenclaw or something.
I can see
like
you
that.
As a Raven. Producer Melanie's a Ravenclaw.
Nice.
Yeah, I am a Gryffindor.
Good for you.
I believe Ronnie and Daniela are also Gryffindors.
Okay.
Joe's a Hufflepuff.
Interesting.
Yeah. He likes food.
They have the game?
Joe and Danielle have it, yeah.
Nice.
But Ronnie just will tell you he's a Gryffindor. Ronnie and Jackie are Hufflepuff, I guess.
Oh,
I don't know.
All right.
I don't know. I can see that.
Well, if I ever get a PS5, I got to borrow the game.
Well, no, it's coming out for PS4 in like 2 months.
Really?
Oh, yeah, yeah. The PS5 and Xbox Series X just got the early release.
Good to know.
So, yeah, I think it comes out in April.
All right. I know what I'm getting my girlfriend for her birthday then.
You know, it's funny because producer Melanie got this for us, mm-hmm. but I'm pretty sure she's getting more game time right now than I
have. Well, that's how it works.
Yeah, I love it. But so I am a Gryffindor, though. I will.
It's fine.
Full and true. So let's start with, did you read the book before you saw the movie?
No, I did not.
No.
I was not a reader.
No, as a kid.
I remember trying to read it because I remember when it came out and the description of the books was, it's very Roald Dahl.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's kind of where a lot of people were comparing them to. They were like, oh, this is the new Roald Dahl, universe, that type of book. It is nothing like a Roald Dahl book.
No.
At all. So, as I've gotten older and, listened to the books via audiobook and then watched the movies, nah. But... I just wasn't a reader much as a kid, so I just really couldn't get into it. I didn't really see it until the movie.
Yeah, I think I started reading. I saw this movie first.
Yeah.
First and foremost. And then I tried to read the book afterwards, and I had trouble at first. Because, and we'll talk about some of the differences, but the very beginning of the book and the movie are totally different.
Oh, yeah.
Like, there's a full chapter
that doesn't happen in the movie.
Yeah. So, for me, it was like, though this isn't like the movie. We were young. What, 2000, we were 14, 15?
14
when
years
the movie
old,
came out, yeah.
When the movie came out, Thanksgiving of 2001.
It's wild to think that these books came out in 97.
Yeah.
I don't think they really hit, though, till...
No, they hit right away.
Really? Did they? Yeah. I don't really remember.
Maybe not in America, but they hit in Britain right away.
Well, it's funny because we talk about other things on this show, like Dragon Ball Z. Mm-hmm. Dragon Ball Z was out like 20 years or something stupid before it actually made it to America, which is even crazier to think about. So it's a similar concept because this did start in England and with J.K. Rowling, who is not very popular right now. And yeah, we're saving our own opinions on that. Good for her. Anywho. So the movie's rolling around and... I read the book after, and I think I started reading the books around Prisoner of Azkaban, maybe?
Yeah. So, sorry to cut you off. The book was released in the U.S. by Scholastic Corporation in April of 97.
Okay.
So, it wasn't like a big gap between when it was released in England and when it was released here.
Well, I think it's easier, too, with the... You don't have to translate nearly as much. I know that there are differences between the quote-unquote British version and the American version, like just more wording, but... I also think that, I still remember watching this movie for the first time and going, why are they saying Happy Christmas? They're doing it wrong.
But yeah, they say Merry Christmas, I think, in one of the later movies.
Yeah,
In August of 99, it topped the New York Times list of best-selling fiction and stayed near the top of the list for much of 99 and 2000.
Mm-hmm.
So that's 2 years after the book came out. So maybe it did. Maybe it wasn't a runaway hit but I can't seem to find that. But yeah, I mean, it very quickly, though, caught on to just being one of those where there's lines out the bookstore when the new book gets released. I mean, I've seen videos of when each book gets released, and
it's chaos.
It's chaos, and it's crazy.
So,
and,
fun know. Story about that then. For the last book, Deathly Hallows, I went, so you, like, Barnes & Noble's was like the place to go. Like, you go to Barnes & Noble and the lines and this and that. We had a Kmart by us, and that's where I reserved it, and they were doing a midnight release. I was the only one there. Like, no lie. I walked in, grabbed it, paid for it, walked out. At 12, got there at like 11:40, 11:45, went inside at midnight, was home by 12:02. Like, that's that's how crazy it was. I was reading that. I read that book probably till about 4 in the morning that night.
Wow.
So, at that time, as I have trouble reading now just because older, stress, you know, all that stuff, trying to disconnect sometimes is a little bit more difficult. But I used to be able to read. I read each Harry Potter book I could read in a day and comprehend it all. Like, I was a very fast reader at that point. But for, like, this series, though, again, I didn't start till, I want to say Goblet of Fire was, like, the first new one I got. Mm-hmm. So, which is good, though, because, like, it gave you a chance to kind of catch up and, you know, I got ahead of the movies beforehand. Because I remember reading Chamber of Secrets and not understanding it nearly as much until I saw the movie. And I was like, oh, okay, now I get it visually. Mostly the stuff with the car coming to life. I was like, what does that mean?
What is this?
Why is this car alive? So let's go back to the original Harry Potter, because we're going to try and keep it strictly to that movie.
Yes.
The movie that we're talking about.
So Warner Brothers Pictures bought the film rights to the book in 1999 for, guess how much they paid for the book, for the film rights to this book only.
How much?
£1 million. That's it.
That's it.
That is it.
That's nothing.
Really, when you think about it, I mean, production began in the United Kingdom in 2000, and Chris Columbus was chosen to create the film from a short list of directors that apparently included Steven Spielberg and Rob Reiner.
Man, those movies, these movies would have looked really different.
Yeah, apparently Spielberg wanted to make an animated version of the book.
Oh, thank God they didn't.
He openly admits now that, yeah, he's glad he didn't get the job because he just had a totally different vision of what vision it was supposed to be.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, Chris Columbus, I mean, for all of us who grew up, I mean, Chris Columbus gave us Home Alone, gave us Mrs. Doubtfire, Bicentennial Man, Stepmom. You know, so he's a very good director. Like,
oh, yeah.
And he's big. He was known to be able to work well with children.
Yes,
and that was the key. And that was what they were looking for. It was like, we need a guy, we need a director who can corral young kids to the point where he can get a good performance out of them. It is hard to work with children, as you probably know, because you were an instructor. I can only imagine, you know, and these kids are 7, 8, 9 years old, you know.
Well, how old was, I want
to, well, they're supposed to be.
They're all supposed to be 11.
So, I mean, I think Ron was the, well, again, okay, let me rephrase this. At the time the movie was released, I think Ron was the oldest at like 12 or 13.
Well, Daniel Radcliffe is 2 years younger than us.
Yes, so he was 12 years old.
Yeah, so
he was
about
a little older. I think Hermione was around the right age of actually being the age of what the character was supposed to be.
And even better, apparently they all had to write essays.
Yes.
And
can you imagine having to still go to school?
Rupert Grint didn't do his. And like Daniel Radcliffe did his, but it was okay. Like Emma Watson, like wrote like a diatribe. And we're gonna talk about the cast in a second, but like the fact that they nailed it in every capacity. So anything else about the director stuff though?
No, just again, they put the rights to screenplay by Steve Kloves. The producer was David Heyman, and you know, they were just looking to make sure they got the permission from J.K. Rowling to go full on about what they could take out, what they could put in. We'll get into that a little more deeper into the episode. And we're gonna jump on the cast in a minute.
Yeah. So I will say though, that one of the things about this series and the book and movie, there's a lot of good payoff. Like towards the end, like a lot of things get paid off. Like, you know, all the way that Snape talks to Harry and like all these things. And we did find out that I think Alan Rickman was the only person that knew that Snape was actually a good guy.
Yeah.
Like, so it's interesting when you find out that stuff. And I really do hope that they did have all this, or J.K. Rowling at least had a general idea of how planned out she was.
Yeah. So I know for a fact that Robbie Coltrane, I think, was the only actor she actually kind of wrote the character for of Hagrid. And I don't think she had anyone else in mind, but I think I've heard that it was 100%, you know, true, but I've heard that as she was writing the character, Robbie Coltrane was like the only actor that would come into her mind. Interesting. Like, oh, this so-and-so could play this. But where was I? So they, one demand that J.K. Rowling had for the producers was that you had to keep the cast strictly British and Irish.
She did not want
any American, unless the character in the book was American, which there were no American characters. She wanted strict British and Irish. And to the point where she wouldn't even let them cast French or Eastern European actors unless the characters were of those that set.
When you get to Goblet of Fire
with, you know, the different schools. So that was like the only demand she really had, and they stuck to it.
I like it. So let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we are going to start off with the cast and then do a very brief plot synopsis on Harry Potter and the Sorcerer/Philosopher's Stone. But first, a quick break. Hey guys, it's Paul, and the Misfit Faction is looking for your help. We are trying to grow not only our network, but also grow our brands. And the best way to do that is if you guys are looking to start your very own podcast. Maybe you guys have been listening to us for a while. Maybe it's something you guys have always wanted to do, but you're not sure how to get started. If you go to podbean.com/misfitfaction, you guys will get a month of free podcasting on us. That is a gift from us. So make sure if you guys are looking to start your own show, you reach out to us and go to podbean.com/misfitfaction. Also, maybe you guys have your own online business or service. You're always looking to grow, and advertising is a very big part of that. If you guys go to sponsorship.podbean.com/misfitfaction, you guys can get $100 worth of free advertising, again, as a thank you from us to you guys. That's sponsorship.podbean.com/misfitfaction. All right, we are back, and now we are diving into the casting, probably the most important aspect of this entire film.
Absolutely.
You know, you can, the aesthetic is important, and obviously, nobody knew what Hogwarts looked like. You know, they had their own idea in their heads, but I want to say that these movies actually created the template now.
Of what we know to look, what we expect to see.
So, like, playing Hogwarts Legacy, the castle looks like the movie.
Yeah.
Like, they use the music from the movies. It's one of those rare times where you have a book series and the adaptation has added to the books, mm-hmm. right? Like, when I read the books now, I see the castle, like, I see it a little bit better, and it's rare too for like a franchise, especially based off of a book, mm-hmm. to take on a whole life of its own outside the books, but also still include them.
Yeah,
right. So as much as I love superhero movies, very few people will see a superhero movie for the first time and then go dive into comic books, because it is a daunting task at this point.
I just want to say one thing, since we're going to be doing all 8 films.
Okay,
I firmly believe that this series has the greatest casting ever.
I will not argue.
I do not dislike any choice they made in any casting of any character in this film series.
Mm-hmm.
I think every character was perfectly cast. Now, it's interesting, there are some characters that were originally supposed to be played by different actors.
Right.
And then you go back and you think, oh, would that have been just as good? If not, yada, yada, yada. But from the characters we got to see, I mean, it was almost an event when you heard so-and-so was cast as a character in, especially once you got to, like, Prisoner of Azkaban, because, you know, there were new characters just popping up. I mean, remember when Voldemort, you know.
Oh, that was huge.
Who's going to play Voldemort? We're not going to get into it, but, you know, that's what I'm saying. It was an event to find out who was going to be cast, and, I mean, we'll go over this movie's cast. Just so good.
Yeah.
So freaking good.
All right, so let's start off. Daniel Radcliffe as Harry Potter / The Boy Who Lived.
Can you just talk about luck?
Oh, my God.
I mean, luck of finding. I mean, how do you tell a parent that we want your son to play the lead in one of the most anticipated film series of all time?
Mm-hmm.
And what is going to do to your kid?
I mean,
like, it's going to launch him into just
superstardom.
He's never gonna, you know, be the same ever again. You know, it's crazy.
Yeah.
And they almost didn't get him. I mean,
The parents were apprehensive.
They were not able to find any kid that worked until they met Daniel Radcliffe, but they had to convince the parents. They were like, please, he is the best option we have.
I remember seeing, like, when they first cast him at, like, one of his first press conferences, and I was just like, holy crap.
I know. He looks just like him. I
mean, and we will I acknowledge the fact that, yes, his eyes are different in the books, okay? I'm a huge Harry Potter fan.
Yeah.
And Harry Potter's just like a lot of other fandoms where there could be very toxic fans. So we do understand that he is not 100% perfect, but he's 99.9%. Like, they do a great job with
it. Very much like I have an issue with people who bash Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
If the creator of the universe has no problem with it, then you shouldn't have a problem with it. So yeah. J.K. Rowling had no problem with it, then no one else should have a problem with it.
Yeah, but Harry Potter like had to look a certain way. He had to be a certain way. And Daniel Radcliffe does a great job. There are some writing choices in the later movies, but mm-hmm. for the most part, like I would say this is the first... This movie is where everything almost works. Like, it is probably the most accurate to the book. It is the best with the casting. And it set the tone for the rest of the universe. And I think a big part of that was Daniel Radcliffe. Yeah.
So I apologize. So it says here that Chris Columbus had wanted Daniel Radcliffe for the role since he saw him in the BBC's production of David Copperfield before the open casting even began on the character of Harry Potter. But because of Radcliffe's protective parents, he would not allow their son to take part in the audition. So apparently they wanted him from the get-go. They just were not able to get him till the last minute.
Well, I'm glad that his parents came into it. But anyway, going down, we have Rupert Grint as Ron Weasley. All right, so Ron is the best friend, the sidekick, the partner, and I think Rupert Grint does a great job.
Absolutely.
He's one of the actors that definitely gets better as he goes.
He does.
The first movie, we'll be honest, the acting is a little rough sometimes.
Well, it's kids.
They're kids. They're babies.
Yeah.
I think the only person that is completely their character the entire time is Emma Watson as Hermione.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, just nails it. But they do a great job with Ron, and, you know, you understand Ron. Like, he's the one that I think more people relate to, I think, sometimes, because he isn't, you know, special. He isn't, like, the boy who lived. He's, you know...
He's just... become friends with this one kid who just happens to be
sitting alone on the train,
and this kid happens to be just the one that defeated the darkest wizard in the world. I mean, you know,
and apparently he's baller rich. Like, he is.
We'll take the lot.
Oh, like, dude, when they open up that vault at Gringotts and it's just like nothing but gold, and I was like, even as like an adult, I'm like, dang. In the movies, I don't think they ever explained how they had that much money, the Potters. I think they explained it off, you know, like one of the... J.K. Rowling was really good about doing interviews afterwards and, like, explaining things. I think that's how they came out with Dumbledore with being gay.
Was that
she said it, like, later on, not ever in any of the books. But, you know, Ron is just... He's Ron. He's the, you know, he's the in-between from this wizarding world to the regular world that Harry needs, like that bridge.
Yeah, he's like the perfect person for Harry to team up with.
Somebody to explain things.
Yeah.
You know, he's for the audience just as much as he is a character for Harry.
And Rupert Grint, I mean, he really has grown into... I mean, he still acts, but not nearly as much. He's definitely kind of stayed out of the limelight. He'll pop up here and there in like a more of an independent British movie. He really hasn't done anything in the public eye. And, you know, he came back for the reunion special, but... I mean, he really isn't really done much else and stuff like that. So, I mean, I believe he's married. I think he has a kid.
Yeah.
So, but he's definitely been the quieter of the three.
And then you have Daniel Radcliffe, who went to like experimental stuff. He was doing also, what was it? Equus.
Equus, I believe, is the
name. Where he's naked on a horse.
Not naked on a horse, but okay.
You know what I mean. He just did Weird, which was supposedly fantastic.
He was on Broadway. He did How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying.
And Miracle Workers.
Miracle Workers is hysterical. He's actually returning to Broadway. He's doing a Stephen Sondheim's Merrily We Roll Along.
We didn't realize how funny he was until... It wasn't until, I want to say...
Oh, did you see the Weird Al Yankovic movie yet?
I just said that.
No, you didn't.
I just said he was fantastic and weird, but I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, you said just weird.
That's the name of the movie.
Okay, just say Weird Al Yankovic.
I'm so sorry. But yes, I heard he was fantastic. Cut it out, man. But I lost my train of thought. Thanks
no,
a lot.
Did. You're fine.
We didn't realize what great comedic timing he had. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until the scene in... I know we're jumping ahead, but I think it's Half-Blood Prince, where he does the luck potion, mm-hmm. and he's like basically drunk. He's like, and pincers, click, 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 click. Like, he's just... That was, like, the first time that you saw, like, some of his comedy chops. And now in, like, Miracle Workers, he's very funny in it. But we also have Emma Watson as Hermione Granger. I love Emma Watson. I think she's very underrated. She's another one of those actresses who... She did more stuff afterwards. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, she was, like, Spring Breakers to kind of get out of that role. But what do you think about Hermione in this first movie?
She is just that the typical know-it-all... girl that every kid knew in school. You know, she's as you find out in the second book, she's a mudblood. She's half, her parents are human, she's a witch. But she just has that, you know, again, she's got that personality where not many people want to be friends with her, but Harry being the one who's like never had a friend in his life, you know, he's quick to be like, you know, understand her and, you know, feel bad for her. So they form this trifecta of the three of them.
Yeah, the trinity there.
But she is, yeah, she was, you knew right off the bat, all three of them were going to be great in the characters that they were playing.
They encapsulate every aspect of it.
I mean, we didn't know it as we're watching the first movie. I mean, I'm maybe, you know, because when the first movie came out, I believe the fourth book was already out. I think the fifth book was, she was still writing it. So, I mean, we hadn't even gotten all of the books yet.
Right.
So we were like, okay, how far is this going to go? Like, are they going to make every movie? We didn't know. I mean, we had no idea how successful this was going to be. I mean,
do you remember the show Lizzie McGuire?
Yeah.
There was an episode of Lizzie McGuire, and I remember this vividly, because they've edited it since, where the younger brother sneaks to high school for like a day, and he's like, all the kids think he's the coolest, and there's a scene of him walking through the hallway, and he goes, you know, and he basically says that he was the one that pitched that they make the movies of Harry Potter. Like, I remember this, like, distinctively. Okay. It's like one of the first episodes, but I always think about that, because it just makes me laugh, because that's Disney also.
Yeah.
But It's true. Like, we did not know where this was going to go. And then this movie just explodes. And we'll talk about the after effects of this movie, too. Mm-hmm. Going down. Now, this is just an order of, I guess,
I think billing? It's billing? No, I think it's alphabetical order. We're doing it in.
Okay. We got John Cleese as Nearly Headless Nick. We only get him in two movies.
You only get him in two movies. I remember sitting in the theater and just, I just was watching and I'm like, all these famous actors who I've seen in previous movies.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I didn't read, you know, the you know, anything about it, because, I mean, this, again, 2001. IMDb is really at its beginning stages. It has not, you know, really taken off as the big movie database on the internet. So, like, I didn't know who was in this movie. I had no idea. So,
it's
like,
wild.
These actors are popping up, and I'm like, I know him. I know her. And so when John Cleese sticks his head out of the table, and I'm like, holy crap, that's John Cleese. That's awesome. Yeah, I mean, again, this is one of the characters that really kind of got...
I feel like the ghosts really get the short end.
The ghosts got the short end, but when I ended up listening to the book, I'm like, it was fine. There was nothing...
Some of the only things... Peeves is completely gone. I think there was a deleted scene with Peeves.
Yeah, they actually had an actor cast as a role. They filmed it, but then they deleted it. And apparently, though, it's like you can't find the footage of it at all.
And then you see the Bloody Baron in the very first movie.
Yeah, but he doesn't say anything.
He's like Captain Hook.
Yeah, he's just wiggling his sword.
Because in the books, he's the one that kills the Grey Lady.
Yes.
The Ravenclaw ghost. Like, that's all, like, a whole discussion point. But, yeah, the ghosts kind of get the short end. Like, they do, Nearly Headless Nick is in
the second one. He's a little integral part into the story in the second one. But in this movie, he just, you know, you have that fun scene where he introduces himself to the kids. He shows off why he's Nearly Headless Nick.
Ugh.
And then I think he has one other scene after Harry becomes the Seeker.
Yeah, something.
And then
like
after
that
you really don't see him again.
Robbie Coltrane as Rubeus Hagrid. Apparently, Robin Williams was interested in doing that role.
Could you imagine? I mean, I can imagine, but Robbie Coltrane is such a big personality as well as being a big person. Mm-hmm. It made sense. I think this is the greatest casting of the entire series.
Oh,
he
nails it.
He is just such a teddy bear of a person, and in the character, it is so well done. And as I said before, I believe she wrote the character with him in mind. I think it was one of the only characters she actually had envisioned. If this were to be done as a movie, I could see this actor playing him.
Yeah.
And I believe he, like Alan Rickman, I believe J.K. Rowling did divulge some information to Robbie Coltrane ahead of time.
Yeah, she did that for a few of the actors.
Well, because it makes sense because it helps with their performance in the movie of that time, because you don't know where the character's going to go. So
yeah, I like it. Then we have, let's see, Warwick Davis as Phileas Flitwick. He also plays a couple of goblins, and he dubs the voice of Griphook, who was played by Vern Troyer.
And now, fun fact, I mean, Flitwick in the first movie is different from the way Flitwick looks by the end of the series.
Oh, yeah.
So they do change the way he looks, no explanation why, but sometimes, he's the same character.
Sometimes you just want to change it
up. But Warwick Davis, I mean, this man, you know, he's played, you know, an Ewok, you know, he's played Wicked. Willow. Yeah. I mean, he's been all around. He's been in some great film series. And, you know, for the one scene he has, he's fun. You know, he's got that little, like, you know, old... I think in the first movie, he definitely looks more aged. Like, he's got, like, a weird, like, a very gray beard.
I think they wanted to make him look very different than Griphook.
Probably.
Because he was...
It's Leviosa. Yeah.
Oh, Leviosa. But he also does have the choir when they do the song.
Oh, in the third movie, yes, you're right.
When they sing Toil and Trouble or whatever it's called. Which is a great, like, that's one of the few things that, like, they added in for the movie just for aesthetics. Yeah. And just for coolness. And I still love that. I remember that was a trailer, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, that song. We have Richard Griffiths as Vernon Dursley. What a just monstrous man.
Again, the aunt and uncle, perfectly cast.
Oh, perfectly cast.
I had known Richard Griffiths because this is like not too long after Sleepy Hollow. He played the one of the victims in Sleepy Hollow. I can't remember his name. Oh, it's blanking on me. But yeah, he just... A punchable face. Oh, it's got so one of those punchable faces. You just want to, you know.
Just right in the kiss.
I love where he progressively goes nutty in the beginning.
Oh, yeah.
With the letters. He just sells it. Like, I love this, like.
Wonderful day, Sunday.
It's like, in my opinion, best day of the year. Why is that, Dudley? I don't know. It's like, because there's no post on Sunday?
Because there's, right you are, Harry.
There's no post on Sundays.
But we also, since we're talking about that, we have Fiona Shaw as Petunia Dursley and...
Super Mario Brothers.
Yeah, and then who plays, we have Harry Melling as Dudley Dursley.
Oh, and he's actually in a new movie I want to see. It's with Christian Bale.
Mm.
He looks nothing like he did.
Well, so one of the best things about this series is we get to watch these kids grow up.
Become adults.
And basically, a lot of people talk about Neville Longbottom, like how he got like all shredded.
You see it in the movie, but yeah. You know, but I know with the kid who plays Dudley, he
took it to heart. Because like he was a big kid in the first movie. And then
yes. He progressively got big, like bigger in terms of bulkier.
Yeah.
Like
I'm very upset that in the last movie, and we'll talk about it, they take out the scene of him shaking Harry's hand. Yeah, it's because it was like that moment that like between the two of them, because in all honesty, you just see the Dursleys as terrible people, which is what they're supposed to. There's a theory that the reason that they're so miserable all the time is because Harry's a Horcrux.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when you're around a Horcrux for too long, it starts to like ruin you. So that's a fun theory that I always kind of dug. We have Richard Harris as Albus Dumbledore. It is one of the biggest regrets. As much as we like
Michael Gambon,
as much as we like him, I would have loved to see Richard Harris play him
throughout. I do agree with that statement. It would have been an interesting portrayal, because you definitely see Dumbledore do more things with Michael Gambon in the character, as
especially like, physically.
Richard
yeah.
Harris, I don't think would have been able to.
They would have had to use doubles and stuff like that, which is fine.
Well, yeah, it's fine. But Richard Harris, I think, in my opinion, because I recall
Central Park and
listening again. I didn't read. Listening to the book before I saw the movie, and just the description of Dumbledore when he appears on Privet Lane, and you see Richard Harris walk out of
it's
the woods
perfect, yeah.
in the opening scene, you're like, done.
Like,
you can't. And the voice is just that raspy old. I mean, Richard Harris has been around. This is a man.
Yeah, Jude Law wasn't looking good. You get it? Because like he's like, okay, I got you. All right.
I got you. Thank you.
But
I mean, if you've ever seen Richard Harris, I mean, he was a wild, like, drinking English actor. Mm-hmm. I mean, he has been around. So like, and he only took the role because I think of his grandkids, like, begged him. They was like, oh, you have to play this character. So he is nothing like the character.
Apparently, his granddaughter stated that she would never speak to him again if he didn't take it.
Yeah.
Apparently, Sean Connery was offered the role, but turned it down.
Yeah, I couldn't picture that.
Yeah, and then Patrick McGoohan.
No offense against Sean Connery, he just can't hide that accent.
No.
So like it just.
I love when he plays an American with a thick Scottish accent.
Well, it's like when he's in Hunt for Red October. He's supposed to be playing a Russian, and you're like,
you've never heard of Russian Scots? That's not a thing.
But, yeah, Richard Harris definitely. As you said, I agree. It's one of the. It's sad that we didn't get to see more of him. We only got to see him in the first and the second movie, and you could definitely tell in the second movie he is.
Whatever he was dealing with.
Because he passed away like right after filming ended on that movie. So
it's a shame.
But yeah,
Ian Hart as Quirinus Quirrell. I've never heard the first name like that. Professor Quirrell.
Professor Quirrell.
Yeah. So I do love the idea of Professor Quirrell, and it's still one of the better movie twists. Like, if you went into these movies without mm-hmm. having read the book,
mm-hmm.
you were blown away when it was actually Professor Quirrell as the bad guy.
I was myself. I mean, I remember at the end of the movie, I'm like, oh, it's Professor Quirrell.
Yeah. And then it, like, explains, like, how when he, in the beginning, when he first sees Snape and his scar hurts, because mm-hmm. he's talking to Quirrell. Quirrell's, like, Voldemort's looking
at him through the, yeah.
That's why his scar started to hurt. Like things like that were super awesome. Even when you watch the scene of the broomstick freaking out and you think it's Snape, you see Quirrell.
You see
doing
Quirrell
it.
With the eyes.
Yeah,
and obviously
he's doing it.
And but the binoculars that Hermione's looking in are obviously they're shaking, and then they immediately focus on Snape. But
this was also a time where they weren't sure how the magic was going to look.
Mm.
And I will always say that when they finally get to like the fourth or fifth movie, and it's just I miss spells.
Mm.
Spells were always fun. I've said this in a lot of our other shows that I like when you hear a spell where it's like you have to say it. It's like it's a the powerful thing. And eventually the wand fighting especially just devolved into them just whipping at each other.
Yeah,
it's a lot of that, and I kind of miss the whole like.
Well, still this, even in the battle scene at the end, you still hear some spells going.
Yeah, like mostly Expelliarmus.
Yeah.
But anyway, going. We had John Hurt as Ollivander, which was huge.
I love that scene.
Oh, it's a great scene.
Oh, sweet. He's like, well, give it a wave. And he goes, nope.
They do
it.
They
not.
Do that in Hogwarts Legacy when you go to pick out your own wands. Like, cool. A bunch of them like mess up first. Yeah.
Now, we didn't do it, but at Universal Studios, they do have a Ollivander where you are able to
get a wand.
A wand. And I don't know what entails in the experience. If, like, something, I know you're supposed to be able to wave the wand and it's supposed to,
like things happen.
Interact. So that's how they tell you, oh, this is your wand.
Yeah. For $900.
It's like building your lightsaber at Galaxy's Edge.
Oh my god, I still want to do it so bad. But anyway, we have probably the most iconic.
Iconic, probably right behind
Radcliffe.
Daniel Radcliffe, and in my opinion, right behind Coltrane as the best cast character.
Alan Rickman as Severus Snape, the most villainous of villainy good guys you'll ever meet.
Mm.
And he is just iconic in the role and just so good in the role.
Was not the first choice.
Not the first choice. It was Tim Roth.
Tim Roth, but he was...
he turned it down for Planet of the Apes.
I think he was already filming Planet of the Apes. I don't think he had turned it down for Planet of the Apes. Because I've read that he was going to take the role, but I think Planet of the Apes went over schedule.
Right.
But now, let me be fair. Tim Roth is a fantastic actor.
Oh, yeah.
And I think he would have done a good job, but... Alan Rickman is just Alan Rickman.
You
can't top Alan frickin' Rickman.
When you imagine Snape in the books, and then you see Alan Rickman, you're like, oh my
god. I get it, yeah.
Well done. Like, even in like some of the books where they have like illustrations, he looks just like him.
Yeah.
It is spot on. And we'll talk more about Snape towards the end of the series, because that's when really you learn about him, but he is just fantastic in this. Maggie Smith as Minerva McGonagall. I love her.
Maggie Smith is a gem.
Yeah, she doesn't have as much to do in this first movie.
She has some good few scenes where she gets her I love the when they first go to class for the first time, and they're like, she's the cat, and they're like, can you imagine the old face on McGonagall if we were late? And then she just transforms from the cat.
That was bloody brilliant. Well, thank you, Mr. Weasley.
Yeah. It was when this movie came out and she showed up on screen, I was like, she's not a 90-year-old woman? Because I only knew her from Hook.
From a Hook.
And I thought she was like,
she doesn't age anymore.
I was like, what? She de-aged? How is this possible?
Yep. One other one that we really want to talk about is Tom Felton playing Draco Malfoy.
Oh, he was really good.
Yeah, and he's one of those guys that, like, after the show or after the series ended, he still actively talks about it. Mm-hmm. He's very big on it. Like, he'll post stuff about it. Apparently, Emma Watson had a huge crush on him.
Yeah. Did you watch the special?
No.
Oh, like, the two of them were like soulmates, they say. They're like, I mean, they've never actually dated, but like, they love each other.
Yeah. That's cute. But anyway, Tom Felton also went on to play the character in The Flash, which I really liked for that one season.
Oh, that's right.
He was on that. That was a big thing at the time.
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
But, and then we have a ton of other people that, we could mention.
Julie Walters as Molly Weasley. She was great.
One scene.
Ron's mother. Yes, but she was still very good.
I will also say that a lot of these actors who they cast in, like, even Ginny, she's only in the one scene.
She's only in the one scene, but she's a prominent figure in the rest of the series.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the same actress, too. I mean, the fact that you cast a character who's literally has no lines except for good luck, and and you're like, oh, okay, Ginny's more prominent in the next book. Are we going to keep this one little girl who really didn't do much, or are we going to cast more, maybe a more trained actress? We don't know.
Especially at the second.
I'm interested to see, like, when she auditioned for the role. If they were like, okay, we're technically auditioning you for the second movie, but because you're only going to really say one thing in this movie, but I would like to actually know that about the process, because that's interesting. But I mean, there's other Zoe Wanamaker as Madame Hooch. You never see Madame Hooch ever
again.
Like, she doesn't appear in any other movie.
And she has such a cool look to her with the eagle eyes.
She looked, yeah, she did. And then, obviously, you have all the rest of the kids. Harry Melling, we already said, as Dudley.
Matthew Lewis, Devin Murray, and Alfred Enoch as Neville, Seamus, and Dean.
Yep. And then James and Oliver Phelps as Fred and George Weasley.
Right, yeah.
I mean, they were perfect.
They're another series that we don't see, or another group that we don't see too much in this film.
No.
It's in later films that we really get their chin.
And there's one other, Argus Filch, David Bradley as Argus Filch.
Oh,
he's just one, again, one of those lovable, you want to hate characters because he's just this old, crotchety old man.
So now that we've gone through most of the cast, again, we're going to be doing all of these films, so we might mention different cast members in each film.
My goal would be, like, we don't need to talk about the cast members that we've talked about before. It's just all the, the new ones that are added to the new book.
So this movie comes out, and it is a cultural phenomenon. High budget film too, $125 million. That's nothing to scoff at, especially in 2001. And how much did it end up making, Sean?
That's a very good question, Paul. Hold on, one sec. I am not prepared.
Oh, I had the answer.
Oh, go for it then.
It's $125 million. $1.009 billion
in its initial.
That's just what it says is box office. So
that's worldwide. So that's fantastic. I'm sure it made back its budget in the first opening weekend.
First 25 minutes, probably.
Yeah.
Like, this movie, huge. You know, the music. You got, who was it? John Williams, right?
John Williams, another iconic film score.
Yeah. But I mean, luckily for this movie especially, because it's shorter, they were able to keep a lot more things from the books. There are some minor differences. Like, we did mention that they took out Peeves and stuff like that. Apparently, actor Rick Mayall was cast in the role, and they've never released those films or those scenes. The first chapter is told from Vernon and Petunia Dursley's perspective.
Oh, you ever seen the movie Drop Dead Fred?
I've heard of it. I don't think I've ever seen it.
Oh, because the actor who plays Fred was cast as Peeves, the poltergeist. That's the actor who they cast.
Producer.
So now all I can imagine is Drop Dead Fred as a ghost.
That's really funny. Yeah, and then a couple of other things, like how Norbert gets taken away, Harry and Draco Malfoy's first interaction.
It was in an alley, on the train. But again, as we've said numerous times, it is very difficult to turn a book into a movie, and you're never going to be able to keep everything from the book in the movie, because or else these movies would be like 4 hours long.
Oh, yeah.
So
Especially once we get towards the later ones.
Well, absolutely. I mean, you noticed it probably the first time was Prisoner of Azkaban.
That's where it really started
where
to hit.
You really started to be like, oh, they cut that out.
I mean, the firebolt thing alone.
Well, that, yeah.
But, like, also, even Quidditch, like...
We'll definitely get into it, because there were some... I was angry when I found out certain things were cut out of certain ones.
Anything in this one, off the top of your head?
Not so much, because I really think everything they really cut out of this was kind of just window dressing. Just nothing that really forwarded the story or took away from the story really being understood. I think maybe you could have really gotten a little more into the backstory of Petunia and Uncle
Vernon
maybe if you did that opening scene with them instead.
I'd like to see that as like a short,
but I love the opening of the movie where it's just in the shadows and it's just it's Dumbledore, McGonagall coming, and then Hagrid on the motorbike. It's so great.
It's
with
iconic.
The music. Just think, we've talked a ridiculous amount of time about this, but like, the man has given us Star Wars, Indiana Jones, Superman, Harry Potter. I mean, so many of these scores are Home Alone are so memorable. I mean, I remember in the theater, I'm just like, oh my God, this music is fantastic.
Oh, so good. But in all honesty, like, this movie did the best job at setting the tone for the rest of the entire series.
And that's one thing I loved about the special. It gave Chris Columbus the kudos I don't think ever really got for creating this. He set the tone. I mean, Alfonso Cuarón took over it in the third movie, but Chris Columbus, first two movies, he had the hardest job, I think, introducing people to these characters, building a world that was believable.
Creating the aesthetic, like all these things. Like, it was a daunting task.
Daunting task.
Now, do you feel like this movie lived up to that task?
I do.
Okay.
I do.
So if you were to give it a Star City rating?
I would give this a 4.
I'm right there with you. I think a 4 is just a perfect way.
Solid introduction to a franchise, to the point where I couldn't wait till the following year when Chamber of Secrets came out.
I can get beyond that.
Like, I remember seeing the trailer for Chamber of Secrets and being like, oh my God, I can't wait. I know. Like, you know, it's...
So I will also say, and we'll put this out there now, in my opinion, I don't know what Sean's is, this is one of the few movie franchises where there isn't a bad... I enjoy every single Harry Potter movie.
If I can watch every single Harry Potter movie. But
So you might... we'll get there. We'll get there. So, yeah, that's going to wrap us up for our discussion, unless you have anything else you want to say about...
I think I'm good.
Think you're good?
I mean, the movie did garner a couple of Academy Award nominations, Best Art Direction, Best Costume Design, and Best Original Score for John Williams, but it did not win any.
Shame.
Yeah, I don't want to get into it.
It's okay.
Still bummed.
But we would love to hear your thoughts about Harry Potter, and of course... I can't end an episode without our favorite thing.
Oh, Fan Feedback Friday.
Fan Feedback Friday. All right. So, and it is a Harry Potter themed one. This was before we even figured out what we were going to do for this episode. With the release of Hogwarts Legacy, what is a franchise that should get an open world video game? So basically get the treatment. We have Fast and Furious.
Interesting.
John Wick.
Interesting.
Indiana Jones.
Interesting.
Roger Rabbit. I would like to hear your thoughts.
So it's 1940s LA, and you can go between the human world and the cartoon world solving crimes. I think that would be cool.
I think that.
Whether you're as Roger Rabbit or you're as, you know, Eddie Valiant, I just think that would be interesting.
Oh, all right. I can get behind
that. That's me, but I also, you know, I like that type of stuff.
All right. And then
I think the Indiana Jones one would be awesome, too. Yeah. Have we ever had an Indiana Jones video game, like, in the era of the amazing video games that we get nowadays?
No, nothing recently.
Okay.
And Supernatural is another one that's on this list. Yeah, that'd be a fun one.
That would've been good. We never got a Supernatural video game either.
I think they made something, but I don't remember. I'd like a Buffy one. That'd be fun.
Buffy would have been interesting, yes.
All right, who'd win in a fight? I think we did this already, but did I say Buffy versus Sam and Dean Winchester?
Yes, you did.
Yeah.
And you thought Sam and Dean would win.
All right. What about Angel the Vampire versus Castiel? I think it's going to be Castiel. I answered it myself. I wasn't prepared. I didn't think of any good who'd win in a fight ones.
Yeah, it's all right.
All right. Oh, here's a good one. Ready?
I got one.
Okay.
Who'd win in a fight? Bellatrix Lestrange or Sirius Black?
Womp, 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 womp.
Oh, that's right.
All right, ready? This is actually a serious one. Who would win in a fight? Harry Potter or Sabrina the Teenage Witch?
That's not even a question. Sabrina the Teenage Witch.
You think Sabrina the Teenage Witch? The whole show is about...
I don't think Harry Potter is that good of a wizard, honestly, when you think about it.
Death Battle did Harry Potter versus Luke Skywalker. Was really cool.
Luke Skywalker would win in a heartbeat.
He did, and it was brutal.
Luke Skywalker at his peak?
Peak Skywalker.
I love Harry Potter. He is not that good of a wizard.
Yeah. Harry Potter's one of those characters that definitely... Like, he's got his own merit and skill and ability, but he's also very reliant on everybody else around him.
Yeah.
But we would love to hear your thoughts. And if you guys are looking to participate in Fan Feedback Friday, it's super easy. You go to Facebook, you find Cinematic Adventures, and you just like it. And every Friday, usually between 8 and 9 a.m., Eastern Standard Time, you'll find a Fan Feedback Friday there. So make sure you guys check that out. You can also find more of our content on our website, themisfitfaction.com. And also, we are on all social medias, including Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, all those things. Just type in Cinematic Adventures or The Misfit Faction, and odds are you'll find some of our stuff. Well, Sean, this was enjoyable. It's a good start to our series.
Yes, sir.
And
looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's going to be a good time. So as always, I'm Paul.
I'm Sean.
And we'll see you guys next week.
Have a good one.